Recording here. Welcome to the Use Case Realization Call for August 5th, 2020. Today we'll be discussing the 5G service modeling solution that we've been working with the modeling team. And we're going to have some overview discussion and then some discussion of the solution and some possible start of implementation of how we might make this work in the in ONAP. See, I'm gonna just close those. Sorry. All right. So. Okay. So it'll take me some minutes to just kind of go over the problem, and the concept of the use case and stuff to for some people who are new. I know some people are kind of newer to ONAP here. All right. So there's a use case that I've been working on with some other people for the 5G service modeling and service creation. I've actually been working on this for several releases now. And it's starting to take shape, which is really good. It talks about basically how would we create a system to be able to turn up a real live 5G DU, PNF. And I know many people don't necessarily come from a wireless background. And for those of you who do, it may be just a couple of minutes of patience here. So 5G is basically the next generation of wireless technology. By now, you've probably seen commercials for various providers that are touting 5G. It really sort of lies on three big ideas: enhanced mobile broadband, ultra reliable low latency communications, and massive machine type communications. So, enhanced mobile broadband, 20 gigahertz uplink or downlink, 10 gigahertz uplink, which, you know, is just a lot more, 100 times the capacity of LTE, 1.5 times the speed, so up to 300 miles per hour, 500 kmh. So what does that really mean? Like in 3G, it would take 26 hours to download a 4.4 gig high def movie. In 4G, it takes 6 minutes with 100 megabits per second. And in 5G, with 10 gigabits per second download, it takes 3.6 seconds, 3.55 seconds, right? So a lot more enhanced mobility. URLLC, a sub-millisecond latency, will allow for the ability to control devices from afar, and MMTC, high-density communications, 1 million devices per square kilometer, or 2.58 million devices per square mile. So with ONAP, we're really trying to manage a 5G system composed of a centralized unit, distributed unit, and radio unit. And ONAP really manages the CU and DU, but there are applications that care about the RU and its cells. So there is also discussion about the, thanks for joining, Andy, I see you joined, Jacqueline. So there have been discussions about the cell, because it's something that there are use cases that care about this, the cell, but ONAP doesn't directly manage cells per se. And generally it only comes to know about cells through the PNF that it does manage. So from a modeling perspective, it's something we need to just sort of consider. How would we represent a cell? How do we know about it? How do we store any kind of information about it? And a cell is basically a geographical area that the antenna covers that's on a particular carrier frequency. Okay, so a concept that goes all the way back to 1G days from the first deployments of wireless in the 1940s and onwards. Okay. So 5G, ONAP is going to be creating services, a 5G service probably, and that service will contain resources, a VNF, a PNF, and maybe ANFs, and other things that are normally associated with the service. And it, from a design time perspective, whether in, you know, in this SDC design studio, you'll likely describe or load or onboard a PNFD, which describes the kind of links that your PNF can support, its connections, its virtual links. And those are things that are already kind of very well modeled in ONAP. And then we come to basically one of the things that we need to think about is in the 3GPP standards, which are the standards that guide the that all vendors and service providers are sort of driven by for 5G, it guides or it suggests a very detailed object model both for the transport, which I'll show in a few slides, and the RAN side of the house. This is all based on the generic information model in 622, of which the 5G NRM in 540 phase one, part one, and 541 part two and three describe the model of a 5G network. So everything derives from this manage element information object class, and from those you can instantiate functions, and these are a hazard relationship and UML modeling. And those have cells. So these, this, so anywhere you see G node B, that means 5G node B. And I think they didn't want to put a 5 in front of here, so they used G for, I don't know, I'm not sure what what the G stands for, but E node B you'll see means whenever you see that, that means 4G, a 4G node B. And DU, distributed unit function, and then the NR cells representing the cells of the DU. So let me kind of skip through some of these objects here. And this is, I mentioned, there's the transport model as well. So ONAP itself also has some models of PNF descriptors in design time, or describes some basic, you know, the connection points and IDs and so forth. And there's a VNFD. And then the ANI schema describes, this is a view of ANI's view of a PNF. So you see here some identity parameters, some things you would traditionally associate with inventory, like type, vendor, model, and IP addresses, and things like that. So, and Jacqueline and I have been looking at the geolocation stuff. There's a whole nother presentation here for that, and recordings and meetings that we have monthly. So that would take a long time to go through. But here's sort of a overview of some of the relevant standards. So Jacqueline and I and Andy and others have been looking at this civic address geolocation stuff, from driven mostly by the TMF-GB922 location, which defines the place object, the RFC 625, which defines actual geolocation parameters, and ETSI SL001, which has the civic address stuff, which Tin from Nokia has actually helped introduce some new geolocation stuff for, which may become relevant also. We need to, these things are somewhat related. We need to make sure that we don't drop the ball on that as well. But more relevant to this discussion here is these standards that I just mentioned, which together, these four standards kind of describe the 5G NRM. And then within ONAP, of course, there's a number of different objects, and the ANI schema, the SDCAAD model, the platform information model, and the complex and place object are relevant. So I've had a number of discussions with, you know, like Jacqueline and Andy and many others from the modeling team in the past couple of weeks. And also, again, we have monthly meetings the third Thursday of every month, where we're trying to figure out how together as a group we can solve this problem. Meaning you have a well-defined model coming from 3GPP. And as Marge had pointed out when I had spoken to her, like in ORAN, they're also looking at sort of a similar issue. And optical may also have other views, and other, you can imagine other domains will have similar sorts of problems that there are similar sort of models that they'll bring to the table. And the 5G NRM as you just saw, is a very well-developed model. So how do we incorporate a framework so that for a particular vendor, as you can imagine, for a particular vendor, there will be many other vendor-specific parameters as well, which vastly outnumber just the standardized ones. So in the standardized ones, there's hundreds of parameters there, and lots of objects and stuff. So one way, there's sort of three things that we've been discussing. So one way is to try to incorporate all the elements in the platform information model from the 5G NRM. And you see there are actually some similarities. Actually, let me just show you side by side. It might help. Let me just close this here. So you see in the platform information model, if you put it side by side next to the 5G NRM, you can kind of see there are some similarities, right? With manage element, manage entity, and these functions are these network function things, and cells could be captured in CMPS. So I mean, you can more or less, you could probably incorporate a structure within the platform information model that such that you could nestle within it all of the new incoming information. And Andy who's on the call, also had suggested maybe putting some sort of a core model that maybe other things could hang off of if necessary. So that's sort of the basic problem statement, I think, that one approach would be to maybe extend the 5G the existing platform information model with the 5G information. Another solution, which Zhu had proposed, which we've asked to be on the call, but he's not on the call yet, would be to introduce or kind of suck in this 5G NRM or optical model into this generic application model, which is what we've been discussing in this past week with the modeling subcommittee. So in this solution, basically you would pull in the 5G NRM as essentially or the model that you want to support for your PNF as an artifact. And then that would also have all of the vendor specific stuff. And then that would then be associated with the service CSAR, and then at runtime it could be used by the runtime components. And that's where potentially both SDC and CDS, and that's why Yuri's on the call, so he can advise us with how to proceed forward, kind of comes into play. So let me see, I have a picture. Yeah, here. Okay. So where we kind of left off, at least in the modeling team, and here's where it would be nice to get some more knowledge and input, particularly from Yuri and maybe others. So if we look at just one of the parameters to help us confine the problem statement a little bit and think about it, and let me just show you really quickly the sort of scope here. So I spent a couple months putting together this spreadsheet, which has all the parameters in the standards in a table. And you see there's like 288 parameters. So there's a whole bunch of parameters, but not necessarily parameters that ONAP will necessarily care about, right? There's a ton of parameters, but they're not necessarily related to the higher level management of a 5G network. But there are a few that use cases within ONAP are already underway do care about. So the end-to-end network slicing use case, for example, really cares about these, about the slicing things coming from the NRM. And that's why this solution is really coming to a head, and it's really important that we kind of come to a good, some kind of good solution before different teams run off in different directions. Another one that's really relevant is the PCI, which the OFSON PCI use case cares about. And somewhere in here should be, yeah, okay. So here's the here's the PCI one. Let me just tag it yellow here, are the ones that we immediately care about, and maybe cell ID as well. So because the PCI use case cares about that. So in any case, there's a small handful of parameters we kind of need to solve right now. So what I did in this spreadsheet also was I took all of those parameters and kind of jumping around here. So the in the standards there's a bunch of objects that are listed and parameters associated with each of those objects. I just took the description of the objects from the standards, and then I created another spreadsheet pulling out all of the actual parameters, and then cross indexed it against where they're mentioned. And so in this spreadsheet, you kind of get a list of the unique parameters, right? And there's whatever 100 unique parameters. And I went to the ANI team and I asked, do you think any of these belong in ANI? Which is an important thing to figure out, right? If something does belong in ANI, that's a whole other separate development effort. But it turns out after three ANI meetings, none of these are absolutely necessary in ANI. Things can be represented already in other ways or with the existing infrastructure of ANI. So essentially everything else is going to go to the CMPS database, which is good because that's a sort of more natural repository for this data. And if you're not familiar with the CMPS project, I gave a presentation at the virtual DDF in June. There's recordings and we meet every Friday. So if you're interested in that and you can find out more, I can point you to recordings and stuff. So let's go back to this. So basically, if we just look at the immediate problem, right, and a couple of attributes rather than everything from that, it kind of helps you maybe think about the problem. So we have an object that's represented, a class that's suggested from the 5G standards, 3GPP standards. And we have a couple of parameters that are suggested that the end-to-end network slicing team, I'm sure, is going to want to use. So in this solution, what we would do is essentially onboard a brand new artifact into the vendor onboarded package that is this NRM network resource model artifact. And then we would need to add or modify the SDC software to be able to support this new non-metal artifact type. and what would then happen is you would basically, as you in design time, you're going to define a service, say a 5G service, you're going to associate resources with it, say, I don't know, Huawei or Ericsson or Nokia base station associated with that service. And then that service will then include the artifacts necessary to support the associated with the resource necessary to support that service. And then that gets exported into a service CSAR package that's an output of SDC onto the DMAP bus, and then listeners in various runtime components. I only listed one here. There's lots, right? Would then receive that package and be able to then access that artifact. And of course, the question then comes: how does somebody know where to find that artifact, and for that resource, what is the right pointers and so forth? And that's why software change would need to happen in SDC so that you can, so that other runtime components can be cognizant of that new artifact type. Also, as the CMPS project gets underway, it would also be aware of that NRM. And then when you have a resource with that type using that NRM, it would then basically create the appropriate records using the appropriate type of definitions that you have for the attributes that you want to support. So let me just stop there for a second and see, first of all, see if Andy or Jacqueline wanted to add any thoughts or comments too, because they've been in a lot of these meetings with me and have had a lot of great ideas too.
Yeah, so kind of what occurs to me a bit is we just probably need to be careful about defining what classes, right, in both design time and runtime, these new artifacts are associated with, right? So, like you're talking about additional service attributes, I can see having a Yang model that associates with that service descriptor, right? But then you can also have the service descriptor can have related endpoints or connection points. It can have related links, can have related resources or subservices that compose it. So perhaps we want to follow kind of a similar structure that we currently have for a service descriptor and service descriptor components in when we do this sort of thing, so that we don't, you know, just kind of override everything by saying a service has this, you know, massive Yang model. Maybe we want to make sure that the Yang model is associated with specific resources that are used to support the service.
Yeah, I'm sort of looking at it in a different, from a different angle, but I think I came to the same conclusion. Since this is a vendor onboarded CSR.
Yes, right.
Those Yang artifacts, I mean, when they come in, you have some sort of PNFD or VNFD. Mm-hmm. You know what your resource is at that point, but you don't necessarily know what service you have that you're going to use that for.
Correct.
That's a later stage. So keeping those Yang models associated with the resource rather than the service, so that you could, when you create a new service, just sort of pick up all the necessary Yang models when you need them. I think that might be more efficient. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and that's exactly what, if that wasn't clear, that's a good segue actually into some of my next slides, which I just wanted to pause here for a second before I went on, just to make sure that people were kind of clear. And first of all, let me just open the floor to other people too. Are there any other questions from other people who, I know Andy and Jacqueline have seen this many times, so if there are other people who just have general questions, let me stop here for a second before I move on.
So Ben, why do we need a new artifact called NRM?
So this is one, so we're kind of brainstorming, right? So the so far I think the best solution I've heard is to introduce this new artifact. It's hard to answer that question without moving on to some of my other slides. So let me go on to my other slides then. Right before I do that, are there any other general questions before I answer Yuri's question?
Just one comment about the example here. Maybe actually network slice is not the best example, because the classes and attributes you show here are not for the XNF itself. Mm-hmm. It's actually a management layer.
Oh, that's model. True. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to pull some, you know, to sort of make it easier to think about there is some classes and some attributes that you want to bring on board that is suggested from the 5G NRM. But you're right.
When you talk about the onboarding, mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes from the vendor, mm-hmm. Some kind of artifact or collection of artifacts, that they will describe all of the attributes.
Yes.
It's not a subset.
Correct.
So you already get that. You get the complete set of attributes at onboarding.
Right. Which is exactly my next few slides. So I guess let me just go on to them. So Zhu Shang from Ericsson and Michaela and myself have been working since R4 on the onboarding use case. And this is a view of what's in the PNF onboarding CSER file, not to be confused with the SDC CSER service CSER file, but it's also a cloud archive file, which is basically has some structure to it, like a root directory, metadata, definitions, artifacts, and a manifest file, which tells you stuff inside the basic meta information, and then metadata, which tells you more information, meta information about the file. And then within that, there's an artifacts directory, which describes or contains your configuration stuff, your Yang definitions, your PM dictionary, your VES events. And so somewhere in here would you would store this whole body of parameters that your XNF will support. And Zhu suggested, let's have a new artifact, this NRM Yang or possibly Ansible, depending on the vendor, I guess, would have an artifact that could basically house all of the parameters in. And he said that, well, you know, this could just be an artifact in, say, the Yang directory or configuration directory, that some in one of these directories or even its own directory, such that you would point to it from. Oh, and Zhu joined the call. Thanks for joining, Zhu. I was just describing.
Yeah, sorry, I was late.
Yeah, I was just describing your, and maybe you can describe it better than me, but I was just describing your idea of this NRM object, which I really like. So basically, Zhu suggested, well, what if we just introduce this NRM artifact, a new artifact, which could be stored somewhere in the directories of your onboarded package, and then basically you would have a non-mano artifact keyword, which could point to that artifact so that you could retrieve it later on. And just to give people who may not be too familiar with all of this, what happens is you onboard a vendor CSAR package, and then it gets ingested into SDC and design time, and all of the artifacts are preserved with some new schema and metadata added from SDC. So essentially, you don't lose any of your artifacts; they are all there. And SDC just adds some extra metadata information on top of that. So I'm basically just showing you here some of the some examples of the artifacts from the onboarded package and how they get pulled into SDC. And then, as Jacqueline pointed out, basically when you during design time, you don't necessarily know the specific instances. You're just defining. Broad general services, and you're working with, you know, the particular, you know, this service is going to need this kind of resource, and you're not instantiating anything exactly just yet. So what would happen basically is in the design studio, you would basically have this, you would onboard this vendor from this vendor package, you would onboard this new 5G NRM artifact, and this new non-mano artifact keyword would basically, which is new software, which would be defined in SCC, would basically point to this artifact, and then you would define the service and associate resources with it, and again, this is this SCC internal CSAR gets created, which is a representation of your onboarded CSAR package. And then within the resource, you have the actual artifact, which is going to get distributed with the service CSAR package during the deployment time. So the service CSAR package will have this 5G NRM in it, which I should probably show actually. And then other things in runtime could access that through this keyword. Zhu, did I kind of get? Did you want to add anything to anything I said? Does that kind of capture the idea?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
So about this 5G NRM artifact, what information would that contain in addition to the Yang modules themselves, if we assume for now that is a Yang-based configuration?
Yeah. So Oscar is asking, what makes it different from what makes this one different from that one? I guess.
Yeah.
Well, if the NRM is defined as a Yang model, you don't have to use a dedicated non-mano artifact keyword. But what I have learned is that some other people may want to use different language to define it, like Ansible. And in that case, you probably need a new keyword. I'm not proposing to define a dedicated non-manual artifact keyword just for NRM. That's not the purpose. The purpose is that they have different language to define it. And if you want to do the Ansible things, and you need to separate things. Did I answer the question?
Well, is there already a Yang? This is just a very generic Yang module, I guess. So I guess maybe Oscar's question is.
Yeah, I believe there is already an UNAP non-man artifact type for Yang modules, isn't it?
Yes, there is one.
Mm-hmm. So you already today you can include in your vendor package a collection of Yang modules for your XNF.
Right. So I guess maybe Oscar is saying, isn't that solution already sufficient, and can't we use that already? Because you can define a couple of Yang models and this just be another one. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. There are actually some subtle details about how Yang works that might warrant including some extra metadata. But it's not a 5G specific issue. It's just that if you have a collection of Yang modules, that does not fully describe what you can configure, because there are some special cases with optional features, deviations, and so on that are not, it really requires extra metadata to fully describe.
Ben, I just send you a link.
Okay. Let me open that up. I'm just adding the other people that are here. Okay. Let me see. Oh, I forgot to mention something upcoming. Okay. Yeah, okay, got everybody. All right, let me go to your thing here. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me put it here too in the notes. Okay. Non-automatic set identifiers.
This is what we have today. So if it's a Yang model, that you can use this ONAP Yang model keyword to onboard this whatever you define there. Mm-hmm.
This one, right? The ONAP Yang modules, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay, and so basically you would have an ID which would say you use this ID, and then you could pair that ID with information about what Yang module files there are. And I guess maybe Oscar's asking, isn't that sufficient? Why do we need a new one? And Zhu's answer is, well, we don't necessarily have to have a new one, except if we want to support other possible types of storage for Ansible, we would want to, you know, if we're gonna support other ones for other vendors or whatever, then we would need one, I think.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing. Does that make sense to people, or Oscar, did that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, I was really wondering if this was something in addition to what already is supported.
Oh, yes. I think, as I understand it, there would be a new ID, right? zoo. So that would be, you know, whatever we want to call it. It would be another ID that would point to.
You could have a new ID if it's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the question is, what is the use case then? So if I'm a vendor and I support Yang, I include those Yang modules that I support in my onboarding package, do I need, in addition to that, provide yet another artifact, and why?
So I think that this is, I mean, if you use Yang, you would have an NRM Yang artifact. And
no, but it's not one artifact. You have a list of Yang modules.
Yeah. This would just be one of those. And I think the solution, the existing solution of the this ID could just point to that body of Yang modules. That's what Oscar is saying, I think. And in that case, maybe you wouldn't need to use this other ID. But then that begs the question, how would the runtime software know which one to use, right? Or maybe it just searches all of them and sees what the right one is.
I guess that's the main point, right? If you're going to introduce some artifacts, then you need to have a runtime software that can understand and process them.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so that's where I'm still not clear why we are introducing this idea of an RM artifact. There was an implementation that we did for Frankfurt that basically leveraged the CDS capabilities to do NRM-based commands for create, delete, and update. So I'm not sure why we're exploring. Is there a reason why we want to introduce a different type of artifact?
Let me see if I understood correctly. Maybe I didn't quite.
Can you give me a presentation for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So this is what was done in the Frankfurt release, where we had a CBA artifact onboarded to CDS to execute different NRM commands. As part of CDS, you can always do, you know, Ansible or NetConf or RESTConf. In this case, they were doing like using a REST executor for executing a bunch of different type of REST commands. And the main idea was that you can see here, they would support, you know, this modify PNF NRM config type of capabilities, or delete or get. And let me see, here's some of the requests that were sent for the create. And you can see there's a definition of the class, there's definition of the data. And then we also had a response that was returned as well of what was done for the create or for the delete itself as well. So there are different use cases that have been done already for NRM, and they just basically leverage the CBA package and the service orchestrator to execute that request itself. So is there some limitation that we're looking at a different option, or maybe people weren't aware of this option, of this use case itself?
But isn't it slightly different problems or use cases? Because here the focus was on supporting a certain set of operations that are NRM related to apply or modify a configuration. And the CBA will help with the actual communication with the XNF and using appropriate protocol and so on. But then what we're discussing until now has been more on around the model onboarding, the actual NRM, if you will, and for use cases where they might be helpful for the UNAP to keep track of what application model and what configuration attributes and so on are supported by a particular VNF or PNF. That was not part of this R6 use case, I believe.
And I guess what we're saying, the model itself is going to be in this, you know, what you're calling the, whatever the name of the new configuration store, right? The SPS or something like that. Is that correct? So it's not about execution of, you know, of an editing or create or delete of an ARM within a PNF or wherever.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you may want to sort of connect the things together so that as part of an edit, maybe you want to check against the model or derive it from the model somehow and so on. But maybe the first step is to have the way, for example, a way to onboard an application model, have it distributed to the runtime and CPS.
Even if it's just modeling, then I would just recommend extending the current CDS capabilities to add that specific file so that whoever the, you know, database is that wants to capture that NRM model itself in the database store, then they can just use the CBA package to capture that file. I don't know. I don't think we want to introduce just a specific artifact in SDC. I don't know if it makes sense just to do it a specific artifact in SDC. Maybe it makes more sense to just include it as part of the CBA artifact. I guess that's my opinion. But Ben and Oscar and I guess Zoo, that's where my initial thoughts were. If you guys are not trying to provision just a model, then I guess what you're doing is fine. But if the ultimate goal is to provision, then I would just reuse what the CBA artifact is.
Yeah, I understand that in CBA that you could load the module, the young module, and do the configurations. That's what I understand. I think what there's an alternative way to do it that is you can onboard the young module from the onboarding package instead of loading it into the CBA. So then in that case, if you load it in the onboarding module, your CBA blueprint script can just read the young module from the onboarding package and do the same configurations.
And I don't see that mentioned anywhere. You would have to describe how those integration points would work, right? Do you mean that in your CBA, you will have mechanisms for extracting some data that is stored in the database that's captured in the YAML model? So I guess maybe that integration point, it's not clear to me. Or it hasn't been yet described.
It's not been described, that's correct. But I believe the only difference is that right now your configuration blueprint script, you just read the young model from your local file. When I say local, it's part of your CBA package, which with this use case is just you could read that young model file from the onboarding package. That's a different way of to get the young model.
I mean, actually today, I don't think models are really used at all. Rather, you just have some instance data that you try to configure, and then that instance data is expected to be compatible with the model supported by the PNF or VNF, but you don't actually use any models and compare with them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Oscar, I think you're saying that basically you create an instance, correct me if I'm wrong, you create an instance of, say, a PNF, and from that you can directly get the data in the Yang artifact. Did I hear right?
No, I'm talking about the previous use cases in UNAP related to configuration. There, you don't involve the models. It's sort of described in the capabilities of the VNF or PNF directly. What has been demonstrated so far is just you're creating, you have some data that you want to apply your configuration data, but that is the data itself, the instance data, and in order to work, it must be compatible with what the VNF or PNF supports. But there's no checks or usage of model information on the UNAP side today. So it becomes,
so how does it know
responsibility of the user to
check?
Yeah, we'll create.
I want to say it's the responsibility of the vendor to provide the correct script to modify that PNF, right? So whatever the network function is.
Yeah, but I guess it's either if you're doing in, say, in SDC or CDS design time, if you're creating some file with configuration to apply, that you need to somehow make sure it is compatible with that VNF PNF. Or if I think actually this NRM use case in R6, there the data was sent to UNAP directly at runtime towards the SO API, and then whoever used that SO API needs to provide the data that is compatible with the VNF. But these previous use cases, I think, have not involved any model that the sort of describes the contract for that VNF or PNF.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I don't know that we're saying we're going to introduce a model here as much as a Yang file is based on a model, and it describes in detail each of the things that it's
Right? Yang file is
a translation of a model. Yeah, it's a translation of a model.
No, so, it is a model.
Yeah, a data model, right?
Yeah.
So what are you saying, Oscar? That are you suggesting there are already existing Yang modules that we should just incorporate this information into without introducing a new artifact? Is that what you're kind of saying?
Well, I think before we get there, I would like to hear more of what is the integration point between this Yang model and the runtime execution? Or, you know, what is the purpose of doing this, right?
Well, okay, so that was what the whole first part of the presentation was about, right? So there's hundreds of, let's say there's, I don't know, whatever, 500 parameters that this PNF needs to support. How does, and ONAP may not need to know about all of those necessarily, but use cases within ONAP may need to do that. So let's just say there's lots of parameters that a PNF is associated with a particular PNF, and they'll be different for different vendors. And I have runtime use cases that need to know about those parameters, the structure of the parameters, the type of parameters, the definitions of the parameters, whether they're a string or whatever integer. And I need to create database records associated with that PNF so that, you know, within the CMPS database, for example, there'll be a record for that PNF. And when I define that record, I need to know what it looks like, right? As an example. And then microservices could then pull that information as needed. to run.
So the first purpose is, first of all, is to create that database structure, right, of all these attributes that are required for the PNF. So that's the first purpose.
Yes, that's one purpose, right?
Okay, so let's go on to the what other purposes are there, right? So
you could imagine also there are, aside from just records being able to store stuff, I mean, there are many microservices. Well, there's the, for example, the OSAM PCI microservice, which needs to know about or wants to store. There will be microservices that will want to use information related to PNFs in a more broad generic term. As number two. And number three, you can imagine also there could be policies or whatever that make decisions based on parameters as well.
I think some of the other UNAP components might actually in the future rely on CPS to some extent for this, either to discover these supported parameters. Mm-hmm. Or the actual values of them for a certain DNF.
Yeah. Did that kind of answer your question here? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because what I'm trying to get at, are you expecting, for example, as part of this distribution, that SDNC is going to do something with it, right? Or is it mainly for the database? If you are expecting any SDNC to do something with it, then you have to define how SDNC would process this artifact. What is it doing? Is it taking action on it? Or is it just loading it right in some database store? So what's the purpose of having this artifact or consumption for other components? I think we want to define the purpose and how it will be leveraged, or maybe it won't be leveraged, right? So just we need a clarity of exactly what we're doing with the runtime component for this specific artifact, because it's very clear for database purposes. I understand it.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to do something like the provisioning, right? Then by sending the artifact itself, you won't enable provisioning. Okay, provisioning requires some actions, some data types, how to get the data types and all of that information. That's what you use a CBA to define. So if you're trying to do something similar in SDNC or other components, then you would want to define that specific action itself as well.
So, I mean, for me, it's kind of most clear for CMPS, it's going to need to pull in this artifact to define records, right? That's pretty clear, and you agree, I think. And for the microservices that need to make decisions or to do stuff using particular parameters, it needs to understand what those parameters are, right? Such as OFSON PCI and network slicing, for example.
OFSON PCI would have custom logic to handle it, right? Or are you saying it's going to use this artifact now and build some platform capabilities to understand what to do with,
Well, I think it has a set of parameters that it particularly works with.
Those are like custom code, right? So it's a custom specific flow that is defined right now for this specific.
Yes, right. So these are the parameters that it cares about, right? And basically these would be stored in CNPS, and they, like the PCI value, for example, is one directly from that NRM that I just showed you on that spreadsheet, right? So this is one of those parameters that it cares about. Wherever it is, so the PCI value, right? So basically that, not all boxes perhaps may support that value, but it can look in that particular PNF and say, oh, I can store a PCI for this thing, and I can do something with it. right? Because, you know, you can have optical boxes, for example, too, right? So, so in other words, more generically, I think microservices, let's see. So microservices are going to be playing around with the records themselves, I think. And maybe they, I mean, maybe they need to do stuff with the attributes within the NRM, but you can imagine certainly that it needs to play around with the records themselves that have been created off of the NRM that are based on, and the kind of record that's created will be based on the XNF itself.
What you're describing, is that behavior based on the artifact, or is that behavior a custom behavior that's built within the microservice?
Well, it could be both, right? You could see, so it could be stuff that I have fixed logic to do something. I take in data, I ingest data, I do something always. But you could also imagine other microservices that might need to look at based on like a correlation thing, for example, right? So I need to look at, you know, this thing happened and I'm trying to evaluate or execute on this policy. Does this thing support this parameter? And if so, what's its value? And if not, I take another different decision. So, or an escalation policy, you know, I need to find out if this situation occurred and I need to escalate it to something, a higher level thing, you know, like a different policy or something, right? So it's kind of hard to generalize, I think, and that the best answer you can say is both, right? So there could be things where they're fixed completely static algorithms, and there could be ones that are more dynamic based on the contents of the NRM. Because of those many hundreds of other parameters, it covers many, you know, many, many situations that that are related to network performance and operation, and you know, those many hundreds of parameters have evolved over decades, right, to do various things. So it's kind of hard to generalize in that sense. So I think the best way in your mind is to think, I could take action on the actual NRM itself, and there are other cases where I won't, or all I need is just the static record and its data, right? But the immediate, that's why I picked a couple of immediate use cases, because it kind of focuses maybe the conversation. The immediate use cases of some PC, in R7 at least, you know, the OFSON PCI use case and then network slicing, if we put a solution in place that works for them, that's great. But also the main reason why I had started this use case was to make sure that whatever solution we do put in place can work for other things in the future without each use case having to reinvent the wheel, right? We want something generic enough that, I have some other case that requires whatever, you know, some other parameter from the NRM or something. And without that use case having to go through all the machinations that we are now, that they have something in place that works. Does that make sense? Okay, I apologize, guys, but we are out of time. Time flew by really quickly. Thank you so much, Yuri, for your input. I hope you guys found this useful. I think we're a part of it is it's an ongoing, you know, discussion to try to come up with a solution. We are meeting on the third Thursday of every month on this topic to try to make progress. So Oscar and maybe Yuri, I would encourage you, and Zoo certainly, and Jacqueline, I encourage you to attend that meeting. We have been discussing this at the modeling subcommittee. One of my next steps is to also attend next Monday's SEC call. So I'm gonna, I think, do that as well. We'll briefly touch on this in the CMPS call 2 days from now on Friday as well. If depending on where we are, I might host another discussion call like this on this topic at a future use case realization. Okay. Thank you so much for attending. Any final thoughts from anybody before we end? Okay, if not, thank you for attending. Have a great day, and I'll let you get on to your next meetings. Thanks.